Welcome, everyone, to the February One Wilf All-Member Call, and thank you for joining us. I am One Wilf Call Team Member Sandy Thacker from the East Bay, California branch. Ann Henney, also from our East Bay branch, Mary Beth Gardam, an at-large member from Winter Haven, Florida, and Michael Ippolito in Massachusetts are also here. If this is your first time on the call, a special welcome to you. Mary Beth?
Oh. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Our call norms and agenda are posted on the text pad, so if you're using your computer screen, you can refer to them, along with a cheat sheet for instructions to engage with the call. Take a minute to review them now, and if at any time in the call you have a technical issue, press number 5 on your phone keypad, and Michael will help you out. If you want to raise your hand to get on a stack when we call for questions or if you have a comment, press number 1 on your phone keypad. We have a lot to cover tonight, so if you can hold your questions till the parts of the agenda that are there particular to, that would be great. Our agenda tonight has 2 major segments. First, we'll be learning more about an important campaign that Wilf US has endorsed and in which we're hoping many of our members and branches will consider actively participating during May and June of this year or even earlier. We'll also talk a bit about ways to get ready for the next Solidarity event in April, Earth Day, and we'll present some recruiting tips that might bring you some new members. But first, we have 2 announcements. One comes to us from Disarm about our support for the Coalition Against U.S. Foreign Military Bases. They are working on closing Guantanamo Prison and Guantanamo Air Base. This is the 115th anniversary of the opening of that base this year, and it is one of the first that we opened on foreign soil. So it's not only strategic, but symbolic to push for closure. And, of course, Trump seems invested in not closing it and continuing to keep prisoners there. We are not organizing broadly on this. It's not one of our solidarity events. For one thing, there hasn't been a lot of time to plan. But the Coalition Against U.S. Foreign Military Bases is asking us to do something, if we can, on February 23rd. To raise awareness about this campaign. That's a weekend. The 23rd is actually the Friday. Raise awareness about their campaign. It could be a protest, a demonstration, a rally, a teach-in, realizing there's not a lot of time to prepare. But if your branch is planning to participate in their event, on February 23rd, be sure to send your information and confirmation to their website. That link is posted on the text pad. It's information or info at noforeignbases.org, and you can go to noforeignbases.org to see other events that are listed there. So they need the date, time, city, state, location, what group is organizing the event, and some description of the type of event, either a vigil, a rally, a march, a video presentation, speaker, whatever you're planning. If you click on one of the events already listed on the site, you'll get an idea of how it's formatted. It's an important effort, and I hope some of you will be able to respond. We also have an announcement tonight from our nominating committee chair, Laura Dewey, from the Detroit branch. I believe Laura is on the call. I hope so. Laura?
Mary Beth, keep an eye on the staff chat, Mary Beth, if you could, please.
Okay.
I don't...
Okay, so Laura is not on the call. If she joins us, we'll come back to her for this announcement.
Okay. Then I want to introduce Mary Bricker Jenkins, at-large member from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Mary BJ is chairing a new ad hoc committee called WILPS for Poor People's Campaign. Mary, will you tell us a bit about our featured speaker and Reverend Barber's organization, the Poor People's Campaign, and what you are hoping for from members of WILPS?
Sure. Hi, everybody. It's so good to see the list of people who are on this call, so many people that I've known over the years and that I've admired tremendously. Tonight we are going to hear from Sierra Taylor, who is actually employed by the Poor People's Campaign National Call for Moral Revival. That's the full name of the campaign that marks the 50th year since Martin Luther called not only for an end to racism, poverty, and militarism, but also called for us to address the common roots of those three evils as he framed them. Now we've added a fourth, namely the destruction of the environment, very much in his honor and in his tradition. I'm also want to say that I'm introducing Sierra on behalf of the ad hoc committee, which now has 12 members who are committed to supporting you all in engaging you, yourselves, and your branches in the Poor People's Campaign. So without further ado, I'm going to turn this over to Sierra Taylor, and I've asked her to say a few words not only about the campaign, but about how she personally, as a young woman, became involved in the Poor People's Campaign. Some of us have been involved since 1968, but Sierra is new to it, and I think it's particularly significant that young people around this country are mobilizing around this 50-year-old campaign. So, Sierra, I'm turning it over to you, and there'll be plenty of time for questions after Sierra makes her presentation.
Thank you so much. Hi, everyone, and thank you again just for allowing me to be on your call. My name is Sierra Taylor, and I've had the pleasure of working with Mary over the past few weeks as we've been bringing WILPS into the Poor People's Campaign as an official organization, part of the coalition. I also want to say that I'm not employed by the Poor People's Campaign. The Poor People's Campaign doesn't have staff. We do have a structure, which I will go over, and the way that it's working is that folks are sort of donated from participating organizations in the campaign. But I just want to be very clear that I'm not employed by the campaign because we're not trying to build a new organization. It's just we're bringing folks together. You know, I'm trying to think about where to start in regards to how I came into the Poor People's Campaign. And I think that because we only have so much time, I'd rather focus on outside of myself for a bit, if you all will. And I'd love to get to know each of you all, you know, personally off of this call. But, you know, today is a really interesting day for me, to be honest. It is the first day of the National Art and Culture convening for the Poor People's Campaign. I'm in Raleigh right now, Raleigh, North Carolina, or Raleigh, as they say here. And we've brought together about 100 people from the 33 states that are currently participating in the campaign who have been designated by their states as representatives of their states. One person representing what is referred to as theomusicology, and these are folks who are singers, chant leaders, spoken word artists. We have visual artists, painters, you know, visual art, and then we have documentarians, folks that are documenting the campaign through cameras, photography, through videography. Really, today for our first sessions, we had a conversation around why would your grandmother need the Poor People's Campaign, which is a really interesting question for me, in that I didn't go automatically to my grandmother that I'm close with and I have a relationship with and who has been around my entire life, but I thought about my grandmother, who I don't really have a relationship with, and you know, I don't really have eloquent words to really put into context of why, you know, my grandmother would needed the Poor People's Campaign, you know, not only today but also in 68, but really just thinking about the effect that poverty has on our everyday lives. And how they can really, or how poverty and economic exploitation can really dehumanize us, can really squash our spirits and our soul. And I was just thinking about the fact that I'm not really close to my grandmother, and it's mostly because, you know, there was always this dark cloud around her. And I think that it really has to do with, you know, the poem "Raisin in the Sun," and just thinking about my grandmother's life and the opportunities that she wasn't afforded to realize her full potential as a human being. You know, in terms of education and just living her life without fear, without being criminalized or being all of a black, poor woman. That also made me think about why today is particularly interesting for me. So I come out of the movement for Black Lives. I got really emerged and committed my life to organizing after Trayvon Martin was killed. I was a student at Florida A&M University at the time. And when Trayvon was killed, it was, you know, I don't think I still have the complete words for it, but I think that it really just sent a shock to my system. And that, you know, growing up, you know, being brought up in a in communities and in a household that really talked about, you know, we're all equal. Everyone deserves a chance at life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And, you know, we had some struggles in the past, but, you know, after integration, everything is hunky-dory. But always feeling like that wasn't true, but not really having a concrete example as to why that wasn't true. And I think that Trayvon's murder really brought to the forefront to me the level of criminalization, the level of and the danger of white supremacy and racism. And the effects that poverty has in the criminalization, particularly of those from, you know, the margins, people of color, women, gender nonconforming, et cetera. And through this journey organizing around Trayvon's death and committing myself to bringing about a world where there will be no Trayvons, I was able to meet a young man named Marshawn McCarroll. And this young man was an organizer from Ohio. He was with this group called the Ohio Student Association. We were really close to Ohio, Dream Defenders in Florida. We used to call it our little Click Flohio. We had certain songs and chants that we knew. We had a really close partnership, and Marshawn was just an organizer. He was just one of those people who stuck out. He was special. There was something about him that made you gravitate towards him, and he had this energy that just made you feel comfortable and like you were at home. So 2 years ago, Marshawn, who battled with poverty, he was a part of the Ohio Student Association, but he was by no means someone that you would typically associate with, you know, sort of like the student life. He was a kid from the streets. He lived on the streets. He battled with addiction. And 2 years ago on this day, Marshawn took his life on the steps of the state capitol in Ohio. Just couldn't take the pressure of being criminalized, of being exploited. And sorry, I don't know why I just thought that I should tell you all this, but I just I guess it'll come to me. But he said his last words that he wrote in a tweet said, if we don't have to live through hell just to get to heaven, I'm going to stay right here with you. And it's just so interesting because I don't know if you all have read about the recent suicide of Douglas Shifter, an Uber driver, but on his Facebook post, he wrote, I work 100 to 120 consecutive hours almost every week for the past 14-plus years. When the industry started in 1981, I averaged 40 to 50 hours. I cannot survive any longer with working 120 hours. I am not a slave, and I refuse to be one. And I think in so many words that this is why I feel that we need a Poor People's Campaign. Because every human being deserves to live a life in dignity. They deserve to live a life with access to food and clean water, quality housing, to education, to health care. To be treated like dignity, with dignity and respect. And to be able to live out their purpose, because I don't believe that our purpose was to be put on this earth to work tirelessly and still not be able to afford to put food on our table or keep a roof over our heads or to have children that we know will live a happy and fulfilled life. So that's why I believe that we need a Poor People's Campaign. And I just really, again, just thank you all for allowing me to join your call and speak with you all this evening. So I'm actually organizing with the campaign on three different levels. And so I have, you know, sort of three different points of views and perspectives that of the campaign. That I just really look forward to thinking through with you all, to being engaged in this movement to build real community and to forge relationships that will be strong and will be able to have the power to fight the evils of systemic racism, of poverty, of ecological devastation, of militarism, and the distorted moral narrative that makes us believe that we deserve to be poor, and when we are poor, we don't deserve to live. So the way that the campaign works is there are parallel structures on the national and state level. And these parallel structures consist of a coordinating committee that coordinates and thinks through the vision and the goals of the campaign, and brings together people to organize and fulfill these goals. And then we have a steering committee that makes up representatives of the campaign. And on the national level, the way that that steering committee looks is that they're representatives of people from local community organizations in states across the country. There are about 20 to 25 people on the steering committee nationally from many different movements across the country. They're made up of people of different ages, different races, different genders, different sexual orientation, and different faith backgrounds, which include folks who are involved in organized religions and those who may not be involved in any religions at all. And then the coordinating committee on the national level is made up of Roz Pellis, a seasoned labor organizer who is a personal hero of mine. She's been involved in every major movement since CORE, or the Congress of Racial Equality. We also have Ben Wilkins, who is our organizing director, and he is he's pulled from the Fight for 15. We have John Parker, who I just met actually for the first day. So unfortunately, I don't have that much information to share about John, although he seems like a really nice guy. And then, of course, we have our co-chairs, Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris of the Cairo Center in New York City, formerly called the Poverty Initiative, with which Mary was also a part of. And, of course, Bishop Reverend Dr. William Barber out of the Moral Mondays movement and Repairers of the Breach. And so the way that the structure is formed on the state level, again, is parallel. So on the state structure, we have two co-chairs. We have a coordinating committee, which are made up of folks, again, who are representing the state, who are coming from various movements, and they coordinate the regional organizing direction throughout the state. Oh, and I forgot to say, so the coordinators, so I messed up. There are three coordinators for each state, or like they call them tri-chairs. I don't know why that's a thing. They're co-chairs. There's just three people. And so the way that the tri-chairs work is that there's one person of faith, one person from an impacted community, and one person of color. There is a steering committee, which is made up of state organizations, so organizations that are state-based. And then on the city level, there is a organizing committee, generally, and then there are committees for political education that are forming. There is an art and culture committee. There is a faith organizing committee. There is a student and youth organizing committee, and I believe that is it for the committees. And so right now, I know that you all have gone over the history of the campaign and sort of where things are, but just as a reminder, we are in the second phase of the campaign, which is our consolidating phase. And so the purpose of this phase of the campaign is to build an awareness and a shared analysis of the situation that we're in. You know, that shared analysis being an analysis of you know, the intersections or the interlocking oppressions of systemic racism, poverty, militarism, ecological devastation, and the distorted moral narrative. And we're also getting across to folks why we need a Poor People's Campaign. I think this is particularly important because we're in the age of, you know, the commemorative years. You know, it's been 50 years since a lot of stuff has gone down. And so, you know, folks often think about these anniversaries in a way to commemorate this these great movements and great feats. But this campaign is not a commemoration, much like in 68. The campaign is coming out of a particular context and why the campaign is called forward. And much like the campaign in 1968, you know, which was started because, you know, Dr. King and many other leaders of the freedom movement realized that, you know, after passing civil rights legislation and integration, that it wasn't having an impact on the material conditions of people's everyday lives. And also, you know, Dr. King said, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, what's the use of being able to sit at a lunch counter if you can't afford a hamburger? And it was also out of the time where movements were, much like society, was very segregated. And so you had folks working in silos and often working against each other and sort of struggling to be the less exploited group of people. And I think that that's very relevant to what is happening today in our society and our movement. You know, we have, you know, generally or legally integrated communities, but yet we still seem to organize in these sort of segregated, siloed bubbles. And, you know, we all know that there's a reason for that, right? I mean, ever since the beginning of, you know, people being exploited, there's always been a system of keeping people divided in some way. And also we've seen that in places where revolution and revolutionary change has been possible, it has always happened when folks have come together and have unified across their many struggles under one identity that spoke, you know, was able to speak to the conditions of everyone. And much like then, we're seeing that, you know, if we're really going to win, if we're really going to build this new world that will allow or won't allow for any more Trayvons or any more Marshawns or any more Douglases or Sandra Blands or what have you, we really need to pull together and end poverty and end the impacts of poverty or the impacts that poverty have on our everyday lives and being criminalized and demonized for being poor. This second phase is also about coordinating the national campaign, of course, and understanding the problems around the country, problems that are both specific and unified within, like, rural and urban divides or the local and national divides, and figuring out, you know, how all of these oppressions, these interlocking oppressions, are really showing up in our communities, and to be able to really build relationships and where we're able to have open and honest conversations about where these systems are attacking us and how they're attacking us, so that we're able to strategize and put forth a vision and orientation that allows us to be in real struggle together and concentrated struggle together. I think that is what I have Oh, okay. It might be good to talk about the 40 days of action, huh? So also in this campaign phase, we're building towards the 40 days of action. And I think that it's important to note that the 40 days of action isn't the goal of this campaign. The 40 days of action is a way of us being in practice together as communities that are coming together to unite. It's a way of being in practice together of building real community and building unified community and being able to be in struggle with one another and moving through that struggle in a love and a loving and disciplined way. The 40 days of action is really a launch. It's a show of force. This is how we look when we all get together and we actually concentrate our efforts around the country. And so the 40 days of action begin on Mother's Day. I believe that's May 13th. And it ends June 23rd, or the beginning of the summer solstice. And so the 40 days of action hasn't been really defined, as a whole. What we do know is that we, again, are having a huge, the big launch on the first day, on Mother's Day, with a theme that week of being child poverty. And that is as far as we've gotten as a whole. Also, what is important here is we haven't yet figured out what of those 40 days that are going to be prescribed, like whether it's going to be, each of the 6 weeks having a different theme, and then what is, being put forth by us in our local areas. That is the 40 days of action. I think I want to stop here. I feel like I've been going on. I would love to hear from you all, your thoughts and any questions that you may have, and I will do my best to answer what I can and what I can't. With love, I will take it and bring it to folks at the national level to think through, and I will be able to get back to you all about that through Mary. But thank you all again.
Thank you so much, Sierra. If anyone has a question for Sierra or Mary BJ, please raise your hand to get on a stack by pressing number 1 on your phone keypad. That's number 1 on your phone.
I see that we have Judy Karras. I think she was the first hand up. We'll do Judy Karras, then Cheryl Spencer, and then Nancy Price in that order. So, Judy, your mic is open.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm from Monterey, California, Monterey County, Wilf Branch, and we definitely are going to be participating, and thank you so much for doing this. I first have a quick comment that the fellow who commits suicide was not a Uber driver. He was a New York City taxi driver, and it was partly because of the Uber drivers and what they're doing that he commits suicide. So I just wanted to correct that. But the other thing is, too, that in May, when we're doing these things, a film that people may want to show is called Brother Outsider, The Life of Bayard Rustin. And he was very, very instrumental in working on the march they did on Washington in 1963 and his life, and he worked with A. Philip Randolph. And so it gives a really good background as to how the civil rights movement broadened, and he was definitely someone that believed in civil disobedience. He was in jail a couple of times anyway, but I don't want to go on, but I just thank you so much for what you're doing, and Monterey, we're going to be doing things in May, so I'm so glad this is one of our solidarity events. Thank you.
No doubt. Thank you for the correction. Oh, my gosh. Thank you. I knew that. I think my head was just like spinning, but thank you so much. That is important.
Okay, Cheryl Spencer, your mic is open.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody, and Sierra. I'm looking at your website at the section called About, and item 11 says, we uphold the need to do a season of sustained, nonviolent civil disobedience, a way to break through the tweets and shift the moral narrative. Could you give us some examples of what you might think as sustained, nonviolent civil disobedience? Is this the kind of thing we're going to be asked to do?
Good question. Thank you. So in terms of the 40 days, just to clarify, it's not that you would have to do, you know, a nonviolent civil disobedience direct action every day of the 40 days. We're looking at it as that actions can be a myriad of, you know, different experiences. From, of course, the direct action, but it could also be a teach-in, political education. It could also be showing brother outsider to a community group. It could be, you know, hosting a day of dinners, you know, with your community and having conversations around, you know, the Poor People's Campaign and who are the poor and why are we poor and what does it mean for us to unite. So it can really be, it can be done a lot of different ways. It is asked that every organization and members do sign on to participate in an action of nonviolent civil disobedience and risking arrest. This is definitely something that will happen at the launch of the campaign. So on the first day, Mother's Day, people are asked to have actions at their state capitals, and I'm not entirely sure what those actions will look like, to be honest. We have a person, her name is Betty Hung. She was with Advancing Justice for Asian Americans out in L.A., and she has just been brought on to the campaign to coordinate the civil disobedience training. And so that was one of the committees I forgot. So one of the committees is the Committee for Civil Disobedience, and it's asked that there are two people who are identified for each state to attend a convening that Betty is putting together to train folks in the art and understanding of nonviolent civil disobedience. That meeting has not yet been scheduled, and once it is, we will let you all know.
Sierra, this is Mary Beth. I was wanting to ask before we went on with more questions from the members, I just wanted to let you know that there are about 42 people on this call representing about 15 of our branches. There are about 40 branches across the country, not all of which are totally engaged, but all of the ones on this call are very enthusiastic about becoming part of your campaign. And 44 people, not 42. And what we'd really like to know is, are there working groups that we could plug into, and how might we, as WILF across the country, although we're not huge and mighty, how might we best support the work that you're doing?
Okay, really good question. Yes, so I am in the process of asking for a few weeks now for a list of the folks who are making up the coordinating committees, well, basically all the all the positions within the committees on the state and local level. And I've been asking for this list specifically for this question, this very question, because the campaign, like I said, is now operating in 33 states. However, not all of the leadership positions have been occupied yet, there are, you know, the local organizing committees and groups that also need capacity. Until we have that list, which I'll send it out to you as soon as I get it, believe me, until we have that list, I have sent out, and you all have probably seen this, but I sent to Mary the list of the state organizers who are crazy busy across the country, but I've talked to all of them and I've gotten their permission, you know, to give out their email addresses because they really want you all to plug in on the local and state levels. So right now, that's the best that we have in terms of knowing who to talk to for each state. Goodness. Could you remind me of your second question? I'm sorry.
Yeah, how can we best support you if your campaign rolls out?
Right, right. So the best ways to support would be to contact these state organizers to find out where you can plug in. And then two, if you have, I'm also working on national partnerships in addition to organizing on the state and local level. And so if you have contacts to national organizations that you all feel would, you know, just, it would be really great to have in the campaign. Or even if you're not sure, please reach out to me. Mary can share my email address, but reach out to me. And let me know who they are. We can get connected so that I could bring them into the fold. And then just another thing I forgot to say is we are in 33 states and we want to be in all of them. So there are states that haven't yet gotten their infrastructure off of the ground, or we're looking for folks who can really engage in the campaign. And the list that Mary sent out, if you are in a state that isn't yet defined, again, reach out to Laurel. Her email address is on that document.
Okay. Next was Nancy Price. And after that, I'd like to call on our president, Mary Hansen Harris. And Nancy, go ahead. Your mic is open.
Oh, yes. And thank you for that wonderful, heartfelt presentation about why you're so pulled to work with this campaign. I just wanted to say that the new coalition against U.S. foreign military bases that had a conference in mid-January has called for large regional demonstrations and marches on April 14 and 15, as well as smaller local ones. And already Chicago and San Francisco are having organizing meetings. And even though this is before your Mother's Day launch, I'm wondering if it would be welcome to have, for example, the California organizers engage with this organizing of April 14 and 15. And since it's a peace organizing, anti-militarism, et cetera, whether that might be something to do. So if so, I'd be glad to reach out to Laurel or whoever is in the California organizing committee Thank you.
Wow. Thank you. Wow, that sounds awesome. That sounds like a really good idea. I think that, one is that the campaign isn't endorsing onto other campaigns right now, just politically. And I think that it's really important for everyone to be at those marches. And so I think that it'd be really good. I mean, if you all go out and represent, and I'm happy to. Is it only in California?
No, I believe Minneapolis, Chicago, New York City, Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, probably Seattle, are in the process of organizing. This coming Monday, there's a very big organizing meeting in Oakland, California. What I'm thinking is, you know, if your endorsement policy is to not yet, you know, sign on to other or big organizational or collaborative efforts, that's fine. If there was a way to use that, you could send out a notice of this organizing around April 14 and 15, depending on what dates are selected for each large march. You know, sending out just a notification so that we can have large participation.
Yes, I agree with that. I am happy to send that out. I can send it to, if you send me information on it, I can send it to the state organizers, and I can also send it to people that I know in those areas. I work a lot around issues of anti-militarization, I'd be happy to pass that along.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
We have also our president, Mary Hansen Harrison, and our wonderful tech person, Michael Ippolito, wanted me to say that he would be happy to contact you, Sierra, with InterOccupy folks. He's tightly involved with Occupy. Mary,
great.
Are you there? Your mic is open.
Oh, thank you very much. Hi, Sierra. Thank
Hi.
You so much for all your enthusiasm and your passion, too, and we join you with open hearts. So I'm particularly interested in Mother's Day. We, in our Des Moines branch a few years ago, had a parade of mothers repairing the social fabric. And the social fabric, we had one of these canapes where we had the silk fabric and wandered through the farmer's market. So particularly as a women's organization, we will be very enthusiastic to get that off and started. I do want to recommend, and I have written on the whiteboard, a book that I thought is really helpful for all of us who want to get a background of the struggles that led up to the decisions that Martin Luther King had made, and because we struggle. And it's called The New Abolition. It's W.E.B. Du Bois and the Black Social Gospel. And it's by Gary Dorian. And I think it is really good to understand that coming out of the Black Social Gospel, the struggles, the internal struggles of how we were to proceed, how the mission would be driven, and it makes I think a profound statement on what Martin Luther King was deciding to go for in the Poor People's Campaign, the inclusivity of it, and I really suggest that people on the call read that. So I mean, it's 500 pages, so you can. It's a little bit of a task, but it does bring into focus the different opinions within the movement, and how the foundation was decided of the Poor People's Campaign, and I hope we all get a chance to at least get a glimpse of it and understand more quickly and appreciate what's happening today and what happened in 68. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I have Joan Goddard and then Robin Lloyd. Joan, your mic is open. Joan is from St. Louis.
No, Joan is
no,
from San Jose.
No, Joan is from San Jose. Sorry.
Okay. I lived in Missouri for a long time, in Columbia, though. So, anyway, thank you, Sierra, very much for sharing. I am going to send the email that I've had ready for a while to send to Laurel Ashton, asking about people in the South San Francisco Bay Area who are already connected with her and with the campaign, because the Peace Center and some other groups and WILPF are wanting to get together with others who, if there are people already connected. And I know that there is as Nancy said, I know there's a big organizing meeting in Oakland this Sunday, which is not the one that Nancy was talking about, but which is a Poor People's Campaign meeting, they say, following up on the visit from Reverend Barber this week in California, Sacramento, L.A., San Francisco and Oakland. I think, because he has already left California yesterday, I guess, was where there were two sessions. So that's an interest. I don't know what time it is, Nancy. I'm going to write you a message with this other information. Hopefully they're not both at the same time. But anyway, let's see. So one of the questions that, and I'm probably going to be drawing a big blank here now when I'm trying to, oh, I know. What I wanted to say was that you mentioned, Sierra, that everybody has been very busy and pretty overwhelmed, but you didn't quite mention why, among other things, which was that Monday was the big kickoff. And that there were, I guess, up to 33 press conferences around the country in all of these states that are, you know, have people involved, and certainly in quite a few of them anyway. So just so people know that the organization just did a major effort of activity this particular week in many locations. So it's not surprising that, both that Sierra is not getting instant response with lists and so on, and also that the rest of us have been kind of holding back to contact Laurel so that we, for instance, in California, and I hope everybody has the list, but if not, Mary Bricker Jenkins has the list of the which states have which coordinators. And hopefully correct email addresses, although Laurel's was incorrect to start with. So that's why we hadn't gotten in touch with her 2 weeks ago. But anyway, so I'm very much looking forward to this. But I do detect a certain amount of, you know, a getting involved support and, you know, what I maybe the role in different places is different depending on the organization in the local area and the needs of the campaign in that particular area. But I think this will be something that will be getting sorted out. And I'm interested also in whether there are any other coordinated large efforts planned before Mother's Day. Already, I know things could come up at any point, and it could change. But if there are things that are planned before Mother's Day, it would be very helpful to those of us in the local areas, I think, to know about that so that we can build that into our WILPF organization, activities and planning and so on. Because I think somebody said, but I'm not sure, and you probably know, Sierra, but the Working with the Poor People's Campaign and being hopefully being part of it is one of our what we call solidarity events, where all of the branches around the country and at-large members who are not part of local groups but are scattered all around and wonderful people like Mary Beth. Anyway, that, you know, we want to be able to encourage people to participate and to be able to say that WILF is doing this as a coordinated effort among our branches and our at-large members. I think that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, and I just want to reiterate, I think the best way to get plugged in right now and to know what's going on is to contact those state organizers. You know, this is a coalition and an experiment and you know, bringing together folks from just like all over. And communication is in process of being ironed out. And so I will be sure to get to send anything that I can to Mary. But just know, honestly, I don't necessarily receive everything. So I apologize. And thank you for mentioning the fact that we just had a major a launch.
I want to remind people that we'll be having time on this call later to do some inter-branch and inter-member organizing and planning. So please keep your questions short right now and pointed at what Ciara might be able to tell us. I know some of our members have already asked about materials that are being produced that we might be able to use. So, Ciara, that's one thing to keep in mind that people are asking about. Robin Lloyd, and then Shirley Lynn Kinoshita. Robin's in Vermont, and Shirley's in Cupertino, California. First Robin, then Shirley. Robin, your mic is open.
Oh, good. Hi. Yeah, thank you, Clara, for your presentation. I attended the Poor People's Campaign in Montpelier, Vermont, at the Capitol, and there were many wonderful speakers, but I was especially impressed by the religious community, a Jewish rabbi, a Unitarian minister, and another minister. I mean, they were passionate, and I have not heard the churches step up in this. So my only point to all of our members, talk to the religious or a member of them or not, get them involved. Remind them that there is, that they have a moral purpose. And I think that will strengthen, make the movement very strong. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, then, Shirley. And I think that'll be the last question for now, and we'll move on to the rest of the call. But Ciara, you'll be more than welcome to stay with us for the section where we do more planning if you can spare the time. Shirley, your mic is open.
Thank you. Thank you, Ciara, for a wonderful overview of this campaign. I am involved actually in the church community. I belong to the same church denomination as Bishop Dr. Reverend Barber. So I have been very interested in how the church community responds to issues, especially social issues over poverty. I have a lot of friends in the community who would take on this campaign because it is because they are African American, they're in a city, they deal with issues of poverty, homelessness, and hunger. So my question is, do you have any materials or speakers who could speak to these groups? Because I think the right voices would really fire up this community. Also, I'm a WILF member. Which I haven't been very active in because I've been active in my church.
That's great. Where are you located again? I'm sorry, you were going on a little bit.
Cupertino happens to be the home of Apple Computer, but I'm with the San Jose branch, which is the same one that Joan Goddard is involved in, and she's much more knowledgeable than I am of what's happening in WILF. But I have been very interested in the Poor People's Campaign, and I heard Reverend Barber was the keynote speaker at the WILF Triennial Congress in Raleigh, North Carolina in 2009. I was there to hear him speak, and he was very, very inspiring. Hello?
Thank you. Yes, I'm here. So I think that, one, if you go to the Kairos Center website, I know that they have political education curriculum that is secular and is non-secular, and they also have some sermons that they recommend to supplement the understanding of the campaign and its goals. The California chapters of the Poor People's, not chapters, but the California, the organization that is happening, look, in California, in regards to the Poor People's Campaign, is really, really strong. So I think that if you reach out to Laurel, she can connect you with the faith folks. I don't personally know what's happening, but Laurel would be the best at who to contact about that, because that's her state that she is organizing.
If anybody has a question for Mary, BJ, or Sierra that didn't get asked now, we will be able to get some questions answered later. And I believe, Mary, BJ, do you have any concluding remarks before we move on to the rest of the call?
Yes, I do, but I can't fit them all into 3 minutes, so I'll just make a couple of them. First of all, I want to say thank you to Sierra. Sierra is 50 years younger than I am, and that to me is so exciting because I feel such resonance with her. And I feel very privileged to have been able to work with her these last couple of weeks, and I look forward to working with her in the future. I also feel very privileged to have been working with the 12 members who signed on to the ad hoc WILF for PPC ad hoc committee. And that is an open committee. We just want to be particularly useful to get information and materials out to those of you who are organizing locally. I think you know from Sierra's presentation that this is very much a bottom-up campaign. With regard to the large national event that happened last week, it was actually not so much a national event as a series of statewide events. And that is one of the things that has both been a strength and a challenge in the campaign. Strength because people are coming together on a statewide basis and organizing locally around the issues and strengths and challenges that they have in their particular states. It's a challenge because sometimes I knew that was going on in Tennessee. I had no idea it was going on in 32 other states. So this is the kind of thing that will evolve in the campaign as we move forward. But right now, the best way to get involved is to work locally, and we will, in the ad hoc committee, will support you in that work. We need to know from you what kind of help and support you need from us, and we will get it to you. I have posted the list of regional coordinators, which gives every state and the regional coordinator overseeing and coordinating work in those states. They then will be able to give you the statewide coordinators, and Sierra will also be able to give us a list. I have corrected the email address for Laurel, so I can post that list again. I can also ask Mary Beth to post the addresses of the two websites that have the bulk of the information about the campaign. And finally, I want to say this. Mary Beth asked very appropriately of Sierra, how can we support your campaign? And I want to see us very much move from that question to how can we participate in this our campaign. This is a campaign that is for all of us. As I said at the beginning, there is not a single issue in which we as Wilfers have been involved over the years that is not addressed by this campaign. It's time for us to come together under the rubric of fusion politics, fusion assessment, and address the common roots of all of these together. So those of you who wish to stay on, please do. We can continue to talk about how best the ad hoc committee can support you in your work. And thank you all for being here. I think we've had more people on tonight than we've had in a long time. It's very exciting.
Thank you all again for having me. I wish I could stay on, but we're in the middle of a convening, so I have to go back to the art build. But if there are any more questions, I'm sure Mary will get them to me. We talk really, really frequently, and I love it. And if any of you all have any, you know, if you want to talk to me personally, feel free to reach out to me via email. I'd love to get on the phone with you. And you all have a good night.
Thank you, Sierra.
Hi, Sierra. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sierra, and thank you, Mary BJ, for bringing this campaign to our members and giving us a way to make a difference on the economic injustices and hardships we're observing in our own community. And we will get back to this subject in a little bit. But first, we have an important announcement from our social media coordinator through the Disarm campaign, Michael Ippolito. Michael wanted to talk to us about why we should be actively supporting the SMART team, the social media messaging they've been doing each week. Each week is key to the success of all of our solidarity events for 2018, including the work we're planning for the Poor People's Campaign. So please give Michael your attention. Michael, you've got 10 minutes or less.
All right, thank you very much. And hopefully I won't use all the time, as I'd like to, if there's any questions at the end, I'd love to field those. So here's how I'd like to start. I'm going to be doing a screen share, so if you're not on the social webinar and you'd like to get on, by all means do so. If you're having any tech problems right now with that, just press the number 5, and our able-bodied tech, Barbara, will take you into a breakout and help you out. But so if you are on the social webinar, just keep your eyes on it for a second, and you'll see this pop up. That's a tweet. And 2 clicks away from there, you just click, click, and you go ahead, and you're tweeting Barack Obama. And that's our petition from the Disarm Committee. So one of the things we've done on the social media calls, and I'll get into this a little bit more. I have a presentation I'm going to do real briefly with you all. But you don't have to know anything about Twitter. You just need to have a Twitter account, and we can help you get one. This Monday, the 12th, Monday, February 12th, gladly going to hold a training for anyone who would like to participate. We can do 8 o'clock Eastern Time, social media training, get you all situated with a Twitter account, and all that good stuff if you need it, and other things, questions on Facebook and so forth. What we do on the Wednesday calls, just like this, we'll do it 300 times, okay, to anti-war activists, you know, anti-nuke activists, all kinds, environmentalists and so forth. So it'd really be great to have everyone on there. And right now what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of turn the screen, kind of looking at the social webinar. You're going to see the screen change in just a second, and we're going to be doing a screen share. You might have to refresh your social webinar window.
Michael, while you are setting this up, would it be okay for Laura Dewey to make her quick announcement from the nominating committee? She can't stay on the call, and it's a very short announcement, and you can be setting up your screen while she's doing that.
Okay, yeah, it's all set up, but go ahead, sure, she can do that.
Laura, go ahead. Your mic is open.
One second. Laura's mic's not open. Now it is.
Oh. Okay.
Okay, now you're open.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody. I apologize for not being on the call earlier when I was announced. I am the chair of the nominating committee and a member of the WILF U.S. board. And part of our job is to find, as you know, people to run for office. But this year, we are also looking for people to serve as delegates and alternates to the International WILF Congress, which will be occurring in Accra, Ghana, at the end of August. So what we're doing is we're going to be sending out application forms to anyone who is interested in serving as a delegate. We have 5 delegate positions, 5 alternates, and delegates will be able to get a stipend from WILF US for their stay. And so it promises to be a very exciting Congress. The details are on the international website. And so if you have any interest in serving as a delegate or an alternate, contact me through this email, nominatingcommittee@wilfus.org. Maybe someone can type that up on the screen for me. I'm not at my computer. The second announcement I want to make is that we are going to be doing another round of elections this fall for board members, and we will have 3 board positions opening up in January 2019. They are my job, which is chair of the nominating committee, the chair of the development committee, which is fundraising, which is Mary Best's job, and president of WILF US, which is what Mary Hansen Harrison is doing right now. So those 3 positions will be open up in January, and I'm urging everybody to think about whether it's themselves or other people they think might be good candidates to nominate them and contact me, and I'll talk to them. And also, this year we do have 2 interim positions open on the board because no one ran for them last year, and they are an at-large position and the chair of the personnel committee. So I just ask you, I'm reaching out to you all to just think about either running or think about people in your branches, or if you're an at-large member who may be interested in running, and get a hold of my committee at nominatingcommittee@wilfus.org. If you have any questions, just email me, and I'll be happy to, we'll get in touch. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Laura. Go ahead, Michael, you're on.
Okay. Let's see. Let's make sure. All right, good stuff. All right, thank you very much. I'm going to get the timer going to kind of stay true to the time here. So if everyone sees the social webinar page, this is Building WILF Smart, okay? Now, SMART is an acronym, and it stands for Social Media Action Response Team, okay? Social Media Action Response Team, WILF Smart. Okay, so if you don't know, this first image right here, this is that one on the left looks like a camera on a phone. That is Instagram's little logo. The next logo in the middle, the little bird, that's Twitter, and then the next one is Facebook. All right, so what we're going to look at right here is what is a social media action response team? These are some questions that we're going to look at in this little presentation here. And what do they do? You know, what is it that actually they do? Why is WILF Smart so important? And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to look at those in just a second, each one. So let's go down here. What is the social media action response team? Okay, let me scroll down just a hair here, and right there. So SMART is a working group, okay? The social media action response team is a working group. And it's comprised of WILF members who are committed to utilizing social media. Now, we haven't formalized that working group yet. What it is, really, it's people coming on the calls on Wednesdays and some people who've been active on social media. But what we're trying to move toward is creating that as a working group that people respond to do the following 3 things. Amplify the collective voice of WILF and our members. And we do that through social media, okay? Magnify WILF and social consciousness. because so many people use social media. And it's not just Facebook and Twitter and all these different things. We'll get into that a little bit. And then use social media as a tool for recruitment. Because when someone comments or someone likes it and they're not a Wilf member, you can go ahead. The smart folks are going to go ahead and reach out to that person. Not aggressively recruit them, but just work to build a relationship. Oh, I saw you commented. What are you interested in? What do you do? Ask questions, start to build a relationship, and over weeks and months, eventually, you know, doing outreach with them to invite them to calls and this and that, and all kinds of things. Okay? So this is, that's just a little bit of what a social media action response team is. All right, so what does a social media action response team do? All right, so let's look at this. If you've ever seen like a New York Times article or something like that, or any news article nowadays, on the very bottom of the article, okay, you can paste, write and paste stuff that will go on a social media. That's really important stuff because you can set narratives with that. You can engage the public discourse with that. It's really, really important. Not just news articles, blogs, and other social media posts. So this is a way of kind of, again, reaching social consciousness. That's one of the things people do who are part of this. Also coordinate with those posting on the National Wilf page or the branch pages on Facebook to like, comment, and share special posts within the first hour they're posted online. That's really important because when you post something online in the first hour, if you get a lot of people to interact with the content, especially if it's new content, it really boosts its kind of the breadth of it, how many people it's going to reach. It gives it a kick on social media. So, for example, like a well-coordinated release of, say, a petition or something would have a whole group of people who would be ready to share it. We share it, and then everybody shares it and posts it all around. So that's something, you know, that really, really helps. So you can also join us on the Wilf Weekly Wednesdays Twitter call. Every single Wednesday we're there. We're there all the time. The Wilf Weekly Wednesday. So no, you do not have to come every Wednesday. Once or twice a month would be great. You know, if you're an overachiever and want to come 3-4 times, that's welcome. But once or twice a month would be great. And this is a great opportunity. Bring your friends. Bring your kids. And bring your grandkids if you have them, you know. You know, recruit little children from the neighborhood who tweet. Every kid, they do this, you know. And, like, it's a fun thing. It's just click, 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 click. And
we do not need to be a Wilf member, right, Michael?
No.
They do not need to be Wilf members.
They do not have to be a Wilf member to participate on the Wilf Weekly Wednesdays. Anyone is welcome. They're open to the public. All you need is a Twitter account, and we'll help you set it up. And if you need one this coming Monday, just I'll send out a registration link to everyone on this call. You can register for the training on Monday. If anyone needs to do that in order to get a Twitter account, or if you won't have any other questions. A lot of people ask me questions about Facebook, too. We do all kinds of things, events and things like that on Facebook. Okay? Now, another thing that you would do that happens with this is I train you on going on Facebook and joining these activist groups. Okay? So, like, for example, I'm a part of just like 60, just for like around like certain politicians that were like really, really famous the last election, not to talk about politicians on the call, but pretty progressive, you know, groups that were supportive of that politician. I'm not talking about me personally, I'm just saying, you know. But the point is, when I go blast stuff or stuff with Black Lives Matter I'm involved with and, you know, Occupy stuff, I can blast it to an audience. I hit about 700,000 people when I canvass all the groups, meaning I'm posting to groups that the potential viewership of all of those groups, 700,000 people are involved in that. Now, that's not 700,000 people are going to see it every time, you know, but you're giving that potential every time you do that, okay? So that's something to be a part of those groups and then share on those groups as well. I just want to also mention, I put up the post for the Twitter, and people were saying on the call last night, you know, that we did, it's really amazing the type of people and who we are tweeting to. And they have millions and millions of followers. So if these people, we're giving the opportunity, they're just a click away from sharing our content. And that would be extraordinary. That's like swinging for the fences. Because if they share our content, then it goes really big. And thousands more share it. Then thousands more share it. And that's where you have the concept of virility, something going viral. You know, but you need some big, big people sometimes to share stuff, and it can just take fire. And there's more, but that's enough for now. So let me go back to here. Now let's see, why is Wilf Smart important? Okay, the social media provides a platform for Wilf to amplify the collective voice of Wilf and our members. Okay, so that's really... social media really does that, especially with younger people. It's almost like it's like advertising in a sense of like letting people know, like, hey, this is who we are. This is what we stand for. You know, and it's a great platform to do that. It magnifies Wilf and social consciousness, part of my, you know, not being able to talk. And then, again, as I said earlier, using it as a tool for recruitment. This is a great way to get young people to be involved or to start, you know, building solidarity with a group and so forth by even liking and sharing their stuff too. It doesn't just mean, as you get more active on social media, you don't have to just do it with, you know, with our stuff. You can do it, you know, with others too. So I say, please join Wilf Smart and actively recruit other Wilfers to do the same. We do. We need you. We need you. You know, I was thinking about, you know, putting that old like World War II picture on there, but we want you, but, you know, we're anti-war. I need you. I should have had a picture of me going, I need you, you know, because we do. This is something really important I want to say before, you know, my time expires here, which I may have already, but I appreciate your patience. I was asked to help Wilf get 10 million signatures for their petition to support the ban treaty between September 1st and December 31st. Well, we're, you know, close to 5,000 signatures, but the idea that was employed was to have 50, 100, 200 or more Wilfers on the Wednesday calls tweeting at the same time. Because if you have millions of followers, it's hard to get your attention. But if we have that many people on, or as many people as are on this call right now, then you know what happens? They get 50, 100 notifications at the same time, right? The same post. It just raises curiosity. So it would increase our likelihood of getting our message to get shared by them if more people come on. Right now, we've been averaging around probably 10 to 12 people for the life of the calls. Lately, it's been around 8. But we've had as many as 20 on a social media call. But the hope was with the strategy, if people were serious about wanting to get millions of signatures, how are you going to do that in 4 months? You needed to get hundreds of you to be a part of what we're doing, click, 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 to get the message out there. Okay? So that's something really helpful. So with that, thank you for your listening, as well as all that you have done and continue to do in the struggle against the billionaires, bankers, and big corporations. Thank you.
So thank you so much, Michael. And
it's a pleasure.
No, thank you, Michael.
I'm going to change the screen now so you all can see. Go back to the text pad.
Okay. I wanted to thank you, Michael, and it's wonderful that you're introducing us to these new ways to be an activist and new ways to reach out to other organizations and other people and to get our message across. So we appreciate your enthusiasm and your hard work on this. So thanks a lot. Right now I'd like to report briefly on the feedback from branches and members about the solidarity events we will undertake for 2018. Now, we talked about this in the last call and came up with some ideas and then decided to vote on them. And it's exciting to be planning these events together because when we stand and act together on the same day, we amplify our voice. With coordinated resources, handouts, and signage, we magnify our message. When we speak in one voice with common messaging, our voice as WILF is louder, goes farther, is, and our strength becomes undeniable. I think that's something that the One WILF calls has really brought to the fore. The following solidarity events are the united actions that WILF U.S. members are working on across the country throughout 2018. Be clear, even though we all voted to narrow the events proposed to three, plus the Women's March, which was added on quickly because it was coming up so soon, we asked all the branches to confirm which of the three, and hopefully all of the three, they would commit to work on with us as WILF U.S. We heard back with confirmations from the following branches so far. San Francisco, California will do all three. East Bay branch of California will do all three. Madison, Wisconsin will do all three events. Peninsula, California will do all three. The Peninsula of California. Sacramento, California will do all three. Cape Cod, Massachusetts will do two. They cannot commit to the Hiroshima Day event. Triangle, North Carolina will do all three. Des Moines, Iowa will do all three. Santa Cruz, California will do all three. Burlington, Vermont will do all three. Phoenix, Arizona will do all three, and I'm not sure. Tucson, Arizona will do something. It maybe wasn't clear. So maybe they can come in on this vote because we're going to ask people. So that leaves a lot of branches who we have not had confirmations on yet. So if your branch has had a chance to make a commitment and did not call your name and you didn't hear your name, will you please raise your hand by pressing number 2 on your phone keypad now? Now, for all of those, if you have decided to do all three events, please now press number 3 on your phone keypad now. That's all I know what to do here.
Okay, so we've heard from Joan Goddard, and I apologize. I do remember that San Jose responded, and I neglected to put that on the list. I'm sorry, Joan.
Okay.
And so it looks like we have quite a few branches all committed. I don't see any twos other than that. So I think I have everyone. Peggy Olson from Monterey. Blanca Gerard from East Essex County, New Jersey. And Roberta from Peninsula, Palo Alto. I think that we said that Peninsula was on there. We did. And Joan Goddard and Barbara Nielsen from San Francisco. Thank you for that. The first solidarity event ahead is Earth Day. And last year, we participated in many different ways, and it was really great. I'd like to spend a little time planning what specific actions we could agree that everyone would take. Last year, we set a sort of bare minimum requirement for every participating branch to have the banner with the message Peace and Planet Before Profit and to take a photo of it with your branch members. And we got some great photos and wonderful participation. I'm wondering if we might be able to up the ante just a little bit this year and determine a little more that we might agree to do together. Michael and I came up with some suggestions to offer. And then I'd like to hear briefly from all of you if you have any ideas you could add. Not all branches have large numbers of members, so we have to keep the bar pretty low that's simple and something people can do without huge numbers of people. These solidarity actions would be in addition to whatever tabling or educational or protest actions you're planning individually, but they would be, like we said, the minimum requirement that we'd ask. And these are just ideas, so here they are. Number 1, we could use the banner that we had last year in front of a local company that threatens the environment. It could be a weapons manufacturer, arms dealer, pesticide manufacturer, distributor, the Farm Bureau, a company that is a known polluter of air and water, a pipeline or fracking company. The photo should have three elements: the banner, the company's sign or logo, and as many of your members as you can assemble. This is really just a variation of what we did last year, but it does kind of put a perpetrator into the picture. You could also add smaller signs that disclose what offense the company is guilty of. We would share these photos on the WILF Facebook page and ask allies, members, and friends to also share them widely. Number two, you could organize a community cleanup project. The nice part about this is it would help reaching out to families and younger children. Have people go around the community with eco-friendly trash bags and rubber gloves, picking up trash together. Do a quick training for children about what not to pick up and contact an adult instead. This works well in a town center or park. And the key to this is to take before and after photos so we can show at the end of the day what we've accomplished so people can feel good about this cleanup. The before should not include members and focus on the trash, and the after will have the members with the banners and a cleaner park. Number three, we could have the banner center stage with local artists, graphic artists, rendering of local threats to the environment. You could get a local artist to do a graffiti painting or other painting on a large piece of white painted plywood just kind of in real time. You could take a movie of the artist doing a quick 1 to 2 hour rendering in a busy location and post the video to your Facebook page or share it on our WILF Facebook page. Number four, we could stand out at a busy intersection with banners and take photographs. If the branch has enough members, they can cover multiple busy locations. They can take the member with the photo with all 20 members. But by having a signage at several locations, it helps amplify the voice and gives a perception that there are more people involved than there may be. So those are four ideas of a basic requirement that all of us could do one single action together. What ideas could you suggest? Please press number 1 on your phone keypad if you have some suggestions to add. And please just say the idea quickly, and let's move on. We're trying to collect ideas, not discuss each one. So anybody with an idea to add? Or who wants to ask a question about them? All right, I've got Joan Goddard from San Jose. Joan, your mic is open.
Hi. We are already planning to have a speaker at our monthly program meeting, and we'll try to figure out something public as well to do along with it. But I think that's a worthy thing to be added to the list. It's, I realize you're trying to find things where with photos and activities and so on, but we may or may not be able to do that this time on this particular one of the three solidarity events, or four if you want to count our major activity around the Women's March that we already did. Thanks.
Yeah, that there was a lot of participation in Women's March, and we're still posting pictures on the website. Well, we can float these through our branch's contact list and see if we can get more. I have an idea here from Linda Modica. Linda, your mic is open.
Thank you. Yes, to collect signatures on our petition to support the ban treaty would be a solidarity event that, because there's one way, besides climate change, nuclear war is certainly a way to ruin the planet. So that would be, I think, appropriate for Earth Day. Thank you.
It's true, and I think it might be really neat to have an art project where you get children to color the "War is Not Good for Children and Other Living Things" poster. Peggy Olson, you had your hand up from Monterey.
Yes. I think for Earth Day, it's really important to connect global warming with use of fossil fuel by the military. And so what I did last year, joined a local Earth Day. I didn't get to speak, but I handed out flyers that made this connection that if we want to slow global warming, we must end war, because war is using up fossil fuels that we can't afford.
Okay, thank you. And I think the last one we have is Mary Hansen Harrison.
Yeah, hi. Every year we have had, I don't know how many years, we've had it at Forest Avenue Library, but many years. And we have different stations. And at various stations, we have examples of a conservancy of climate change, of various things that we can do. We have toys and challenges for young people, answering questions. One of the things we also do is read Jane Addams' Children's Book Award-winning books about the effects of around the world that climate change is having, although we don't quite say it that to the children. And then we have them go out, and I usually have a butcher block of butcher papers, paper lined up in a couple of tables, and they paint, do their finger paints or felt pens, and we hang it up in the library after. It's a beautiful mural. So we can also send out the various stations we have. It would help you, and we're anxious to keep this tradition going.
Okay, great. Those are some great ideas. I wish we had time to discuss them more, but we don't. And I think that we can continue to share these ideas and get more input from you all on the branches email list. So I hope that that will work out. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, earlier we talked about what the Poor People's Campaign is planning and how they see us being involved. We'd like to open the floor for a short discussion about how we see ourselves being involved, what we could offer, and how we could roll this out in our communities involving our allies and the public. Let's discuss this for about 25 minutes and see what ideas we can come up with. The best part about these calls is getting to do planning and organizing together. So let's roll up our sleeves. Mary BJ, where should we start?
Well, first of all, I think a real easy place to start is by going to poorpeoplescampaign.org and signing the pledge. When that window opens, you will see a pledge, and it says it is a pledge form. And it invites you to select various levels of involvement. Now, here you're signing on as an individual. Not everybody who signs on has to do nonviolent civil disobedience. There are many ways to be involved. So that's a good first step. I will send out the regional contact list so that you will know who the regional contact is for your state. I will send that out. I'll ask... I guess Mary Beth to distribute it, and I'll also send the addresses of the two websites. Anybody who wants any information from us or wants to feed some ideas can contact me and the other members of the ad hoc committee by sending an email to WILF, the number 4, PPC, WILF4PPC@gmail.org. And that way we will know how best to serve you. I'm developing two lists. One is for the ad hoc committee, people who want to really dig in and help support WILF's involvement in the campaign. And the other is what I'm calling the loop list, people who want to be involved in the, who want to stay in the loop with information. So that will be mostly advisory. So that's, those are the next steps that I personally will take, and will invite members of the committee to input their ideas and thoughts and work. So at this point, I would like to ask two things. One, do you have any questions following Sierra's presentation that I can answer or feed into her? The other question is, I would like to know how best we can support you locally, we being the WILF for PPC ad hoc committee.
Okay, so I'm going to say, Mary, first of all, what I heard in talking to people about this, the lead up to this call, was that people were wanting to know what kinds of materials were available from the Poor People's Campaign that they might be able to share. You know, one of the branches had an event coming up really quickly in February and wanted to be able to distribute some handouts about this. I also want to say that even though they're going to be focusing on these days of action, there are events coming up between now and May, like Tax Day, the foreign-based conference on the February 23rd, events at International Women's Day, International Water Day. If your branch already plans to do some of those events, certainly those are opportunities for you to raise the issue from the Poor People's Campaign, or at least make it known that you and your branch are going to be working with them. In that way, you might actually be able to pick up some folks who would be wanting to work on this with you. So that's one thing I could say. I don't see anybody with their hands up for questions, Mary. So I think we might be good to go. If there's anyone else who has a very pressing question or comment, Joan Eckline from Boston just raised her hand. Go ahead, Joan.
I would like to know who in the state of Massachusetts is the go-to person for the Poor People's March.
Hi, Joan. I will send out the list, and I think I have your email address. I could send it to you personally. The list of regional coordinators, and the regional coordinator can get you in touch with the state person. You know, as Sierra mentioned, she has been asking for weeks already for a list, a contact list at the state level, and it has not yet been produced. So the best thing to do is to get hold of the regional person, and she can put you in touch with the state person. And actually, Joan, if you wouldn't mind, just shoot me an email so I can be sure to have your email address at just WILF4PPC@gmail.com, and that way I'll be sure to be able to get it to you.
I have that. WILF4PPC@gmail.com. And I'm supposed
That's
to
it.
Ask you for
yes.
the regional list. Regional list, okay.
Yeah. I'll send it to you directly and anybody else who wants it directly, but I'll also ask Mary Beth to post it as a follow-up to this call. Can you do that, Mary Beth?
Yes, I was going to say I will send out that list And anything else that you want to send out, Mary, to the list of everyone that was on the call tonight.
Yeah. And let me say this about materials. A year ago, there was a wonderful little postcard on the Poor People's Campaign. It was a really nice graphic. They're gone. The buttons, all the little buttons are gone. So the campaign is at this point developing more materials. And as those materials, the handout type materials, as they are developed, you know, I'll be sure to alert people to that. The other thing is that the website, poorpeoplescampaign.org, has a wealth of material. Nothing that is a single page other than the fundamental principles of the Poor People's Campaign, although that's quite good in itself. But poke around in there. There's such a wealth of material. And of course, the fundamental principles are always a good thing to take a look at. In the ad hoc campaign, we are actually having discussions on each one of those 12 principles so that we can really internalize those, not necessarily to have agreement, but really to study them in terms of what they mean in our lives and the struggles that we've been engaged in.
Okay, I think for now we've accomplished as much as we can on this call about the PPC. We'll put out an alert to let you know how to when the next WILF 4 PPC committee meeting is, in case you want to join that committee. We'll also send out the list of regional organizers for you, and we'll respond, Mary and I both, to whatever questions you have that you need to get answered in preparation for doing more organizing around this. It's a long marathon. It's not a sprint. So we'll be working on this for some time.
Yeah, we've been doing it for 6 years
BJ. Already. Yeah. Thank you, Mary BJ.
Well, thank you.
So last summer in Chicago, one of the WILF U.S. Triennial Congress workshops offered ideas for increasing recruiting success. Most of our branches told us that recruiting help is of interest to them, but not everyone could be at Congress or attend that workshop. So here's a chance to think more strategically about how to gain more members. Mary Beth presented the workshop in Chicago, and she's going to present highlights of it here. Mary Beth? Take it away.
I will. Michael is loading a PowerPoint for me on the social webinar page. And this was a pretty dense presentation in Chicago. And I'm going to try and do 15 tips for recruiting in 15 minutes or less. So I hope that we can go quickly. The presentation is called Recruiting for Sustainability. And I want to be clear that this is a priority for National WILF, because we have to be thinking as responsible leaders about how to keep our organization vital and make sure that we are doing succession planning and replacing ourselves. That's kind of what it's about. So next slide, Michael.
Mary Beth, just remind everybody, why don't everybody take a second, just refresh your social webinar so you can see the full screen. That's just something to do when you want a little tip.
Okay.
And when you refresh your social webinar, you should see the whole thing. I have two computers running, so I'm doing it in real time with you to make sure you see it.
Okay, great. Did we get to the second slide?
Yep.
Okay. So I'm not seeing it. Oh, there it is. So one of the reasons National is so concerned about recruiting, just as I know all of you are concerned about recruiting, is that the consequences of losing a branch are really serious. It's abandonment of decades of organizing work. You know, we all know we stand on the shoulders of the women who came before us. It's walking away from a community identity that was won over a long period of time. It's the goodwill of members and donors sacrificed.
Hold on a sec. I'm just, it wasn't coming up for, it should, my apologies.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's losing a community that could have continued to contribute to a progressive vision and to empowering women organizers for decades to come. So that's why it's important. Next slide, Michael. Recruiting planning. Recruiting planning needs to be built into every bit of your annual calendar. It's really important, and it's easy to forget. It's not something that happens on its own. It must be a careful and persistent strategy that you pursue and to which you designate resources. And I'm not talking about money here. I'm talking about focus and attention and a particular person who would be in charge of it. Next slide. Recruiting is everyone's job in a Wolf branch, but it is a mistake not to have a designated recruiting committee or a member task specifically with planned strategic recruiting. Next slide. Tip number one, when you're out there trying to drum up interest in wealth, probably not a good idea to start with the heaviest issues that we deal with. In times of great uncertainty and fear, start with an event that stresses comfort and social community. In a women's peace group that I started, we began with tea, a solidarity. We have a handout that we can share about how that worked, but just keep in mind that it's when you're trying to tell somebody something really serious or upsetting, you want to try and start with a little more. Build a little more trust and community before you get into the heavy stuff. So start with something easy. Next slide. Tip number two, start small with an activity that is non-threatening, comforting, affords a way to plan something easy and fun together that offers an easy win. So maybe you don't want to do a citywide event the first time out of the box. Plan something doable. And starting small allows you to engage with familiar elements in your community, safe parts of your community, churches, mosques, schools, established community groups, because you're not going right to, what's awful about the military. Many of the people you'll encounter have sons and daughters in the military. Let's start with something less confrontational and easier to absorb. Tip number three, ask for help. Don't go it alone. Even if you have the ability in your branch to plan an event on your own, resist the urge. Build capacity, resilience, and outreach by asking people who you might not normally reach out to for help. Next slide. Tip number four. Your success depends on your ability and willingness to use your own personal contacts. This is about building relationships. You have to use personal relationships to build trust and credibility in your community towards a common hope for peace in support of a woman-led organization with international connections and national reach that supports and empowers emerging women organizers. So these are the things that you should be selling about WILF. Because that's who we are. The issues that we work on are not the entire story. And so I urge you to lead with this very hopeful, woman-oriented, empowering women organizers approach. Next slide. Tip number 5. Plan ahead. If you're planning an event, timing is critical, so start early. Begin at least 3 months before your event. 5 months is better. And here we're talking about a particular kind of event, a recruiting social gathering that really involves people. So next slide. Tip number 6, meet in person with the people that you're asking to help. You're making a personal ask. You're asking for them to give you their attention, their time, their energy. It means building a relationship of trust and forging an alliance that will withstand sometimes outside attacks. So don't make this ask by phone or email. Meet in person. Invest time in the relationship. Meet over coffee, tea, drinks, lunch, or brunch. And use your social networks rooted in the community, the people you go to church with, the people you work with, relatives, friends of friends, to forge the roots of a new or restarted Wilf branch or expand your own membership. Next slide, Michael. Tip number 7, make recruiting a priority. Once you have a recruiting committee or a member assigned to recruiting, you need to build a recruiting strategy into your branch's annual work plan. Now, a lot of branches are starting more deliberately to do planning retreats and long-range planning for the next year. Schedule one or more branch meet and greets a year as a separate social event, not part of your normal work or normal meeting schedule. Follow planning steps to make these successful, and we can help you figure those out. Next slide. I'm using as a case study the Des Moines branch, which I used to belong to. And I can tell you that the Des Moines, Iowa Wilf branch had the most success recruiting when they held 2 meet and greets a year. They invited everyone who had signed in at events or anyone whom they had ever talked to about Wilf. And for 2 years, they scheduled these social events in their annual calendar and required members to participate. As soon as they stopped making that very deliberate effort, very focused, and returned to not scheduling them separately from their meetings and holiday parties, their pipeline to new members slowed way down. We were at one point one of the largest branches that Wilf had. Next slide. The unintended consequences of these meet and greets is that you'll find that you get to know your members better, your existing members better as well. You know, we're so busy doing our work that we hardly ever really talk to one another about our lives, what inspires us, what challenges we face, what issues engage us. We're always working on the issues. Meet and greets are important to build relationships within your branch, too. And one of the most powerful questions that we asked in Des Moines as we went around the circle was, what woman inspired you to get involved in peace and justice work? That was very revealing and very powerful. Next slide. Make it a priority to plan at least one meet and greet a year. Schedule it on your calendar. Require your members to attend and bring a prospective new member. Send meeting reminders to new attendees for at least a year afterwards. That's really important follow-up. Tip number 8, use smart business cards. They're a way of giving and getting more information. It's a mutual means of following up on contacts. Smart business cards are memorable, transactional, and offer a way to follow up with hot prospects in a timely way. So next slide. Let's look at what a smart business card is. A regular business card has one or two sides. It has your name, your contact information, hopefully a WILF logo and a WILF website. Next slide. Side 2 of a smart business card has the full name of WILF spelled out, your elevator speech in one sentence. The one I always use is connecting human rights and economic justice to the roots of war since 1915. But you can come up with anything that you feel briefly encapsulates what WILF is about. And the invitation, the day, time, and location of your regular branch meeting. And if you have one, a branch website or Facebook page. That's side 2, which is not unusual for a regular business card. Next slide, Michael. A smart business card has 4 sides instead of 2. Side 1 with a fold, side 2 on the back of it, side 3 on the inside bottom, and side 4 on the back. Next slide. So side 1, we said, has your logo, your name, your contact information, and the WILF website. Side 2, the full WILF name, an elevator speech, your meeting location, time, and date. Below the fold, side 3 is going to be blank, and so is side 4. So what would you do with that? Next slide. When you're having an interaction with someone new who you think might be a good prospect for WILF, after you've discussed why, you know, current events or peace and war or militarization, something you and that woman are very on the same page about, give the printed half to the prospect you're talking to. And then you write clearly. Don't give it to her to write because you may not understand her writing. If you're like me, you may not understand your own writing, but at least there's a better chance. On side 3, you write that person's name, address, phone, and email, or as much of it as you can get from them. On side 4, you write details about where you met, what you talked about, what their interests were, why they would make a good WILF member, anything that reminds you, oh, that was the woman in the bright pink dress that I met at the grocery store who wanted to talk about glyphosate on vegetables. Something like that that triggers your memory, because you're not going to remember this later on. Next slide. Tipper number 9 is persistence. In our busy world, persistence and follow-through are more appreciated than you thought. People are busy. There are lots of distractions. They meant to come to your event or meeting, but life got in the way. Do not just assume that they're not interested. Next slide. Tip number 10, follow up. After you've made an initial contact, maintain a list of active prospects and add them to your email list as friends of the branch. Schedule follow-up calls. Invite them over and over to events and meetings. Timing matters. They might be swamped and unable to come in November, but ready to get involved by April. They might be motivated by some news item or local situation that gets them engaged. Follow up with phone calls and say, aren't you upset about such and such? I thought you might be. Come to our meeting where you'll meet other women who are just as upset as you are and we're doing something about it. After they've attended an event or meeting, call and ask them what they thought. Schedule coffee afterwards to discuss their reaction. Next slide. Tip number 11. Recruiting is a little bit like hiring someone. So why don't we think about it that way? Seek the skills you need, even if it's not a WILF member or it's not someone already in WILF. Hire for your most important branch roles. Approach the people you need for the job. Who do you know already that has the skills and would be a good fit to be a treasurer or a newsletter person or the membership list person or the recruiting chair? Where are they politically? Do your homework. Set a face-to-face meeting with them. because this is not something you want to ask over email or a phone call. Next slide. Maybe they haven't seriously considered joining WILF, but if you gave them a role that was specifically cast for their strength, maybe they'd consider it. Imagine somebody who loves matching receipts with expenses or filing them. This is the person who automatically separates who owes what at the lunch table. A secretary, the person who effortlessly details the decisions and discussions at meetings. Or the newsletter editor, the person who loves working with publisher or other newsletter software. A recruiting chair, you want somebody who's a community connector, who knows a lot of people and is willing to put themselves out there. Next slide. Make your face-to-face meeting a social one that builds relationships. Have it over coffee or drinks and make a personal ask. Ask them to consider if they would do this specific task for your brand, because they are uniquely skilled and you need them to be on your team. Don't let them say no before they come to a meeting and meet your members, or invite them to a social meet and greet. Don't be afraid to press harder. People are flattered to be asked, even if they can't do what you want. And if they can't or aren't willing to do it, ask who they know who also has those skills and might be willing to help. This is you putting yourself out there. Next slide. Tip number 12, and I know that this is sometimes controversial for WILFers. Hold your meeting in a public location. You may feel comfortable meeting in someone's home because you already know a lot of these people. But new people may not, especially women who are of a different age, race, religion, or economic class than you, might feel a lot more comfortable meeting in a church basement or a library or a coffee shop than going to someone's house that they don't know. If you have people who are all comfortable doing the same thing, chances are this is not a very diverse group. Next slide. Let's encourage diversity. Invite new people and create an equal footing for everybody. It's best to meet on a neutral public ground. That way you can choose a place with easy parking. It's accessible to people who are differently abled. It's not intimidating to people who look different than you or have a different experience of an economic equality. Next slide. Tactic 11, train your members to be welcoming. All the best efforts to recruit new people will amount to nothing if they don't feel extremely welcomed when they show up. Preparing the soil well nurtures seedlings. Train your people for specific welcoming techniques. Don't assume it will happen naturally. We have a welcoming handout that we're able to offer to help make that happen. Next slide. Tip number 13. Remember to smile and build in fun. Remember that angels fly because they take themselves so lightly. And remember that Ben Cohen from Ben and Jerry says, if it's not fun, why do it? People stay where they feel appreciated. Your face should light up when you greet one another, where they feel part of something bigger than themselves. Appreciate every moment you have to work together on movement building, because not everyone gets to change the world. And where they feel they are having an impact, you can be the servant leader who thinks ahead about how to make every member in your branch as effective as they can be. Next slide. Tip 15. People stay where they feel appreciated, useful, and part of the gang. That old song where everybody knows your name and they're really glad you came. Your job as a branch leader or recruiting person is to inspire, enable, and empower your team to plan strategically, share leadership, celebrate success, moderate failure, and plan for succession. This is not a one-woman show. It has to be a sustainable model. Next slide. If you want more help, you can find a longer version of this PowerPoint that you can actually show at your meetings and handouts to make it even clearer at this link on our website for the 33rd Congress, news-from-congress. Scroll down to the section that says Presentations from Congress. Or just contact us for more support, either information at wilfus.org or email to shilpa@yahoo.com. That's 15 tips in 15 minutes or less. I'm done.
Well, thank you, Mary Beth, so much. I mean, this is really very useful information for the branches, and I hope people take advantage of getting that more information from those where you referenced. And I wanted to thank everyone who's still on the call for your patience with this very long call. We got a lot done, and of course, as always, there's a lot more to do. We want to remind you that the next call on March 8th will be open to the public. We are encouraging you to invite as many new people to attend this call as you can. The speaker is going to be amazing and inspiring, and it will be a little commercial for joining WILF too. So invite folks who you believe will make good members and future leaders. Step out of your comfort zone a bit and ask folks to dial in. There will be a separate pre-registration link for this public call, and we'll share it in the e-alert to invite you to the call. The focus of the call will be fixing voter suppression in preparation for the 2018 and 2020 elections. The speaker will be consummate organizer and amazing activist Jan Bendor of the Michigan Election Reform Alliance. She will have great advice for what your local branch can do to help reverse gerrymandering and legally challenge the laws that deny access to voters. You really won't want to miss this. And we'll be sending out some preparatory reading and links to prepare for this call. Sorry. If you feel you didn't get to say what's on your mind or you want to ask more questions, please remain on the call for another 15 or 20 minutes for the soapbox. For now, Michael, please open our mic so we can say goodnight.
Good night.
Good night,
everyone.
Good night. Good
night,
everyone.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good
night.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
I can't believe I'm still coughing after all this time, but I am. I've been on mute for much of the call. Okay, so we have Julie from Boston. Hey, Julie. We've got Mary Hansen Harrison from Des Moines. We've got Margaret Pecoraro from Tucson. Linda Modica from Jonesboro, Tennessee. Diane Blaze from Fairfield, Virginia. Jim Allison from Bloomington, Indiana. Patricia Schroeder, who's at large, I think, from Port Townsend, Washington. And Peggy Olson from Monterey. So who would like to start? Does anybody have a question or comment that you want to make? Just raise your hand by pressing number one, and we'll call on you. Okay, Peggy Olson, you're up.
I'd like to know how to connect with the teach-in on Monday for the SMART team.
The SMART team. Oh, great, Michael. Be still your heart.
I'm going to send everyone that was on this call the registration link. And registered like you did on this call. Okay?
Okay, great.
So it'll be 8 p.m. Eastern Time Monday.
Right.
And I want to reiterate that you can have your next-door neighbor, your granddaughter, your cousin, anybody you know, whether they're a Wilf member or not, get on that call and learn how to tweet, do Facebook, and do it for us on a regular basis. That is an excellent opportunity for people in your branch who are not terribly mobile but want to stay active and do something that's really important for Will. So good job, Peggy. Let's see. Is there anyone else? Does anyone else have something they want to talk about? Just press number one, and you've got the floor.
Joan.
Mary Hansen Harris.
What?
Oh, I need to see Joan. But I see Mary Hansen. Go ahead, Mary.
Yeah, I really liked the recruitment job you did, Mary Beth, and that's something that resonates particularly with me because I enjoy it a lot. And I just really emphasize that, you know, you don't have to do all of those 15 things. It started with just one step at a time. But you do have to have a person who's directing it and someone who doesn't want to do it all. That's really important. And you can have two people to help recruit. But it is foundational, and I think that I remember when I went into Des Moines the first time, it was really quiet and meeting and not very welcoming. And I really liked the way you emphasized that, yeah, let's just have some fun and get to know each other. But I think that should be a separate call at some time. Because,
a separate what?
A separate call. That you really have to focus on this and make it really important that that your presentation and other people who've done real recruitment can add their voices too. But we really have to force this issue out into our community because we won't be able to get rejuvenation or fundraising if we don't understand that. I think it was good, but it was tacking on tonight and it was a very long meeting. So I'd really like it if we could get one or two meetings separately. Even if five people showed up, it's better than none.
I agree that it's important, and I'm willing to do it separately. We just have to figure out the schedule, Mary. We have a busy schedule, but we said deliberately we were going to do some trainings this year. So this one was going to be a little longer, but this call just kept asking for more time. So that's how it got so late. They are not usually this long, I will say. And the person that you want to do your recruiting should be somebody who's really comfortable getting out and talking to people they don't know. That's really important. Okay, anybody else?
Joan Goddard has her hand up. Joan?
Yes, about the fifth number one I've poked. let's see. Mary Beth, are you going to send the slideshow contents? I was furiously making notes, but I, of course, didn't get all of it because you went so fast to get it in the time. And there was too much to share, but I don't remember your saying that you were going to send the things. I know often you do, so I'm hoping that you're going to.
I was really hoping people would just go to the link, but I think that's a good idea, Joan. I'll send it to everyone who was on the call.
That's right. At the end, you did say how to get it, and that was very fast also, so I didn't even get all of that written down from the screen. Thank you.
Let's see. Diane Blaise from Fairfax, Virginia. I know that you want to, you're interested in starting a branch in Fairfax. Was any of the information you learned tonight helpful to you in trying to do that? And what else can we do to support your work there? Your mic is open.
You're talking to me?
Yes.
I'm Diane.
Welcome.
Well, I'm just going to try to get started in Virginia, getting people together. What I was hoping for is to have a PowerPoint of some sort about the history of Wolf, so that we could do presentations, let people know about it. Is there something already created that we could easily use, like with pictures and some? That's one thing I would like.
That's a good idea, and I think I did something that might help you to start with, and I'll send that, and hopefully it'll give you some materials. And then it's about how Wilf U.S. connects with the international Wilf, which is kind of an interesting place to start the discussion too, as so many people feel like joining an organization that is both national and international is hopeful, because we get to reach out to women peacemakers around the world. We're not just standing on our own in the United States. So I'll send that to you. It might be a good place to start. And we'll also look for other... I know that there's a DVD called Crossing Borders. It is a very good history of Wilf. If you were able to show that instead of a PowerPoint, I think that might really help you too. I'll get Robin Lloyd to send you one of those.
Well, thank you. Great.
Also, Diane, this is Mary. We are doing a webinar in a couple of weeks. For international, and we have about four presenters. It's about 12 to 15 minutes long, and it will be an overview of the connecting, sort of the connecting dots from the very beginning to 103 years we're going to cover. So hopefully by the end of the month, we'll have something we can send out to, and you can get it on the international website.
Okay, great. That's what I would like. Thank you.
Are we all open now, or do we need to press 1 if we want to talk?
I think you're all open. It sounds like.
Okay. You just mentioned two wonderful things. Are those going to just be sent to Diane, or could they very helpfully be sent to all of us, please?
Sure.
We can have
Send it to the whole list. I'll have to ask Robin. She charges for those DVDs. I don't know how much they are. I probably could talk her into one or two, but I don't know if she'd be willing to send all of them. But I'll ask her.
Charges us for what?
She charges for those DVDs. It's a nominal fee. I think it might be $10 or something like that. But
the DVD.
She has to make the copies of them. Yeah. But it's well worth it. It's beautifully produced and goes way back in history and talks about our work during the Vietnam era. And,
great. Yeah, that's something that would be wonderful for people to know about, and branches might very well want to purchase it from her, or she might want to send, you know, to the people who've been participating quite a bit, etc. Yeah, I thought it was a PowerPoint, maybe because Diane asked if there was a PowerPoint, and I wrote down PowerPoint. I didn't hear the DVD part.
I'm happy to send a PowerPoint. It's pretty easy to manipulate, and I have one that's a little bit longer and more in-depth than what I just gave you. I tried to shorten it, but the other one has more information in it.
Okay, so the PowerPoint you're talking about is the one that you used tonight.
Yeah.
And then the DVD is something that Robin has put together or herself that has access and has it available. Yeah, great. Yeah, well, at least information about the DVD would be great. So that
okay.
You can contact Robin.
I'd like to encourage everyone to go on the international website and sign up for My Will, because it has access. All you have to do is sign in and fill out a little survey, not a survey, but a sign-up form. And it has all the webinars from various sections. There's about, I think, six of them now, so that you can learn about, you know, like Japan and Germany and get their ideas and what they've been doing. And it's really good connecting set out to recruit people. It's a very good tool for your reference to have the history of various sections too, and it's a very interesting a project that they're doing.
Cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who don't know the international website, I mean, I know we can always search for it, but
it's just wealth.org,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I've got to go. Thank you, everybody. It's been great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Mary. Patricia Schroeder, how are things out there in Port Townsend, Washington? I think your mic is open.
Unless you're muted. Yourself.
I don't know. Pat, are you muted? Okay, well, she's not able to speak to us apparently.
Now she's gone to the list. Nope, she's on the breakout. She's in her own breakout. Help!
Huh.
If you're on, Michael's not on anymore. Oh, no.
No, he's on. He is.
I'm right here.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Patricia Schroeder's in a breakout room by herself with Michael.
Woo! No, it's not. She's not in a breakout room. All that means is that the mic was... No, it just had to do with the mic status. And I don't know why someone keeps shutting off Patricia's mic, but it's all the mics are on.
Cool.
Patricia, are you there? Well, she must be muted, all I can say.
She might have herself muted, or she's not on the call, okay. And someone else is in.
I see.
We have Teresa on the call, Joan, Diane, Patricia, Peggy, Linda, and you, Mary Beth, and myself.
Teresa Castillo, you joined late. How much did you hear of what was going on?
Hi, Mary Beth. Yeah, I joined late because I thought I'd just see what I could hear after work before. Sorry, I'm talking in a long stream. I get off work at 6 our time. West Coast, and our wealth meeting is tonight at 7. So I got on about, as you were talking about your PowerPoint and Robin's DVD, and actually I am interested in both of those. I think that might help our branch when we are starting our year with our interns, help them have a little history of who we are. So
great.
So I would like to look into receiving both of those.
I'll make sure everybody on the call gets the information about those things.
Thank you. Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't hear any of the early, you know, the real meat and potatoes of the call. I typically can't get on, so. But I thought I'd hear what you have to say at the end.
Yeah. How did everybody think that Poor People's Campaign information went? Anybody?
Well, I think we got an idea that it's a huge project, and that it's not super organized already, even though they have some good structural things going. But to have a coordinator for about 8 states, which includes California, and then, well, no more than 8, because there are 33 states involved and there are only 3 coordinators who have divided up those states. And so it seems like that in and of itself, much less participating in the overall planning and structure and knowing what's going on so they can tell us, is a pretty overwhelming kind of thing. So it's not surprising if we don't hear immediately back now that we have the correct email address and I waited until today to send something to our state coordinator because I figured that, you know, Monday was a big launch day for all of the coordinators trying to be in who knows how many different states at once. And because I'm sure they didn't do big launches everywhere, but they did in several states, more than 3. Because Reverend Barber was in California at least through yesterday, Wednesday, with 2 events that day, one in the morning and one in the evening, I figured that probably our state coordinator, there was a good chance she was here. And if not, she was because she was busy somewhere else. So I waited until tonight, basically, to ask her for local contacts, because that's what we're trying to do now. So the things on the website are really good, but they don't do a lot in terms of getting you connected. And when you think that the activity is going to start in May, you don't feel a particular urgency to get involved. But people here in our area, in the South San Francisco Bay area, are, you know, starting to, in other groups, or like the Peace Center and so on, are starting to ask each other, so is somebody working on this here and what's happening and so on. So we did find out.
I know how difficult it is. I know how complicated it is just getting all of our branches to do one thing on one day. So I can't even imagine how difficult it is to work across many groups in many locations and try to organize that kind of event. But I would urge that if your group is interested in being part of this, that you try and start organizing now, even before you know exactly what they're going to ask you to do. You could start meeting to talk about the 4 pillars, the foundations of the campaign. You could talk about, what Sierra was discussing about what poor people are really up against in today's world and how oppressive it feels. And, have kind of a listening post about what that feels like. And in that way, start drawing people in. That's kind of what they're suggesting, is building relationship by working together. So it's not too early to start doing that. And then as they come up with very specific asks, you can decide how much of that you can do. But you could definitely be starting to build those relationships and make it a reality in your community.
I've found that, this is Joan again, I want to finish what I was going to say. I've found what our situation is that we're trying to find the other people who are interested. And so I think that asking Laurel whether other people have contacted her from our area is our first step, and I have now done that. The other thing that I found out tonight was that Fight for 15 is actively involved in this campaign. They have one of the three people on the coordinating committee nationally. So, or four people, or whatever it is. Anyway, four or five, whatever. So the fact that we are having in our area the Fight for 15 people are doing a demonstration this coming Monday at a McDonald's, and in their flyer it says it refers to the Poor People's Campaign. So between those two things, I think we've got, you know, but I've already talked with the coordinator of that, and she doesn't know of other people in this area. So what I'm trying to do is to get from, and I hope other people will too, try to find out from the state coordinator who else has contacted them, and then get together with those people. And as you say, Mary Beth, we have time, but it's also good to get started, you know, meeting together, talking together, and finding the other groups that want to be involved and somehow haven't figured out how to or don't even know about it yet. Thanks.
Yep. The Twit. Well, if nobody else has anything they want to talk about or ask, I'm tempted to get off because it's going on 3 hours. This is our longest call to date, I think. And I apologize for it being so long. Like I said, there was just a lot to go over. And I was really tempted not to do the recruiting training, because we had so much else on there. But because I had promoted it in the e-news, I felt badly not doing it. So
no, it was very good to do it. It was good to do it. We just need more time to focus and the materials and so on. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Well, good night. And please make sure to put next month's call on your schedule and invite outsiders to the call. Invite younger activist women or women who are interested and want to get active and may not be sure yet about WILF but want to learn more about it. This is the call. Try to encourage new people to come on the call and learn more about WILF and learn some really important information about organizing to fix voter suppression for the next two big elections. So I hope that you'll be with us. Have a good night, everyone. And I'm going to sign off.
Thank you.
Thank you.
you are currently